Radio City Talk. This is the kickoff. Of course, Friday night football lies ahead. Everton against Crystal Palace. There's a number of intriguing battles and characters involved. Let's have a chat with the Guardian's top writer, Dominic Fifield. Morning to you, Dom.
How are you, Pat?
Very good. Thank you for joining me. Let's look ahead to this one. Friday night football, first of all. Are you a fully fledged member of the fan club yet?
If I'm honest, no. I prefer the football to be happening at the weekend, but there's a novelty factor about it at the moment, so we'll see how it goes. I imagine if you win the game on a Friday night, I saw Phil Jagielka saying this the other day, if you win it, then your weekend's set up and you're happy. But if you lose it, the weekend will just ache. It'll just ache all the way. All that disappointment will just be there throughout until Monday morning. So it's a big one. But you have to make sure you get the points. Otherwise, you're pretty miserable with it.
It lingers, doesn't it? It was interesting to hear Andy Burnham at the Labour Party conference in the past few days in Liverpool. He says the game's at the risk of overexposure at the moment. He was asked about Friday night football, and he was just saying it's at that tipping point. Do you feel that way?
Well, yeah, to a certain extent. I'd like to see the viewing figures for Friday night football before you know, saying that it's overexposure. I do think that the scheduling is a massive problem. I mean, there are a lot of clubs, Crystal Palace supporters will complain this week. I mean, that's a pretty hefty journey to have to be making on Friday night. You know, we've complained for years about midweek games that tend to the other end of the country. But to do it on a Friday night, which, you know, you're not going to get back until 3 in the morning on the Saturday, then it carries on into the Saturday. You know, on a practical level, it's not particularly fan-friendly unless you do it in local games. And it's surprising in many ways that the television companies haven't latched onto that and gone with local matches and local derbies for this Friday night. Maybe there are police considerations to be taken into account on that as well. But I'm not convinced I'm a fan of this yet. But Goodison Park under the lights, it'll be a good atmosphere, we know that. I just think that it could have been better had it been a Saturday at 3 o'clock or you know, 5:30 on a Saturday even. It's not particularly good news for the Palace supporters.
Right, you've got a foot in both camps, a bigger foot in one camp, but of course you pounded the journalistic beat up here on Merseyside. You were part of the press back here covering Liverpool and Everton, but you are a bit of a Palace lover, aren't you? So tell us about Crystal Palace and their relationship with Yannick Bolasie. I saw an amusing line which said that watching Yannick play for a team like Everton would be like bumping into an ex-girlfriend with her new successful boyfriend. I think that's pushing it a little bit far.
There's an element of that. Look, Yannick Bolasie came to represent the team that got promoted at Palace a few years back. Although, actually, if you actually look at the promotion season, he didn't even get off the bench at Wembley in the playoff final, for example. But his game came on leaps and bounds under Tony Pulis, to a certain extent Neil Warnock, and then certainly Alan Pardew in the Premier League. He can be infuriating. My concern when he left Palace for Everton was that he might not be granted the level of patience by Evertonians as he was at Palace, because when Palace bought him, they bought him for £300,000 from Bristol City. Everton are buying him for £30 million, effectively, and they'll want it against the results. And with Yannick Bolasie, although there is scope still for improvement, even at 26, 27 years old, I think he is never going to be your consistent performer. He will have amazing games, as he invariably did against Everton and Liverpool with Palace colours, where he tears fullbacks to pieces, and his extravagant skills, you know, good ability on the flank, great delivery, and the odd goal. But equally, as I think Evertonians saw at Bournemouth last week, he can be completely anonymous and provide you with very little. So it's about Bolasie finding a level of consistency with Ronald Koeman. Koeman is obviously convinced that he can deliver that. He can eat more from him in terms of the consistency. But Palace fans look at him, we look at it with huge affection, because he is so entertaining to watch when he's in full flight and he's tearing into opponents. He is a breath of fresh air. That smile as he does it, some of the tricks, the audacity of some of the things he did. We all remember that it was shovel across the turf against Dejan Lovren when Palace beat Liverpool a few years back. He can be mesmeric in some of his play, but he can also be infuriating. And I think Palace fans will be hoping that he has one of those infuriating evenings at Goodison Park on Friday.
For Ronald Koeman, I mean, it's imperative that his relationship with his fullbacks, but more importantly with Romelu Lukaku, works consistently. That is key to Everton achieving.
Well, there have been very promising signs on that front, haven't there? I mean, he did seem to strike up an immediate rapport with Lukaku, a player that he knew before. And some of the crosses that he is delivering have been on a plate for Lukaku to score the goals. So that is very promising. The criticism that Balassi probably had of Palace was that once Glenn Murray moved on, he didn't really have a focal point in that team to hit with his crosses. And invariably, actually, when Palace had Puncheon and Zaha and Sacco in the team, Balassi actually found himself as the forward man. He was playing almost like a number nine, and I don't think that's his position at all. Look, the Lukaku-Balassi relationship will be key to how Everton prosper this season as an attacking force. And as I say, I think that the early signs are very good and very promising. And that is great. I think Palace fans will look at it and think, well, if we'd had Christian Benteke in the team, maybe he would have stayed, because I think he would have had a similar effect.
Palace, of course, will be massively buoyed by that performance against David Moyes' Sunderland last week. That's the sort of game and result that can really lift your season.
Yeah, well, look, they've won three in a row. I mean, they did play well at Sunderland, but then they still found themselves two goals down after an hour. So it's all relative. I think Pardew might be looking more to the performance against Stoke City the previous week, where they were rampant, and that was probably them. One of their most convincing wins in the Premier League since they were promoted. They've got good pace still, even without Balassi. They've got Townsend and Zaha. Zaha's had a bit of a hamstring strain, so it'll be interesting to see whether he starts this evening. But those two on the flank, there's invention in the middle. Puncheon's done it on Merseyside before. Steven Gerrard's final game at Liverpool, and Puncheon ran the show, really, which was quite remarkable that afternoon. But he's a player of quality when he's on tune and in form. And Benteke is perfect for this Palace team. He wasn't perfect for Jurgen Klopp's Liverpool, very obviously, but he fits the bill for Palace. And they're a far more potent attacking threat this season than they were last. And they've had good results at Goodison Park the last 3 years. Last year's draw, then a couple of 3-2 wins. I think Palace will pose a threat going forward to Everton's backline. The big issue for Palace is that they're still without Scott Dan at the back, and that's a massive blow. That's a huge figure to have to fill in. And Dan has impressed in his various trips to Merseyside as well in recent times, back to Liverpool. And I think Palace will miss him. And Lukaku will be looking at Palace's backline and licking his lips, I think, ahead of this game.
And for Alan Pardew, do you think that sneakily he's got one eye on England as well? He's right up there with the bookmakers at the moment, isn't he?
I would be amazed if Alan Pardew was under consideration for the England job. I know he is one of the leading English managers out there, but I just don't see that happening. I still think Pardew's priority at the moment is repairing his reputation from the very horrible league run that Palace endured from about mid-December through to the start of this little winning streak, actually, in September. It's when they won two matches out of 25, I think it was, in the Premier League. And I think that is his priority now. He has to win over and convince the Crystal Palace supporters that there is a long-term vision here. He is successfully changing this club's style of play and taking them to the next level. I don't think the FA will come calling for him, but I think even if they did, he should be showing Palace a little loyalty to remain there and continue this development, because they have shown faith. Other managers would have lost their jobs for a sequence of results that poor.
Dom, great to catch up. Thank you very much for your time.
Cheers, all the best.
No problems. That's Dominic Fifield, top writer with The Guardian. This is Radio City Talk.